most of us use food to cope with stress and anxiety and negative feelings. So then you get caught in this cycle of feeling really badly about the body that you have, using food to help you cope sometimes with the bad feelings you have about the body you have, those having a downstream effect, of course, of contributing to weight gain or other health-related issues, and then feeling like, look, I'm causing this myself.
Welcome to Speak Up for Your Health. I'm your host, Dr. Arkel Giorgio. And in this podcast, I have conversations with patients about how they found their voice, figured out how to advocate for themselves, and finally got the medical care they needed. My goal is to give you ideas about how to speak up the next time you're getting care. In the last episode of the podcast, Joseph Hone talked about his personal journey with obesity, including the shame and blame he felt with some medical professionals. I invited today's guest to extend the conversation about how to speak up if you're living in a larger body. Dr. Robin Pashby is not speaking from her perspective as a patient, but as a clinical health psychologist and an expert in eating and weight-related issues. She sees patients in her clinical practice called Health Psychology Partners, which is based in the Washington, D.C., Maryland area. She also teaches doctors and health professionals around the country about how to have effective and empathic weight-based conversations with their patients. When Dr. Pashby sums up what she does, she says she specializes in the collision of physical and mental health. Enjoy the show. Can you give me a clear example of where physical and mental health collide when it comes to weight, and specifically obesity?
Sure. Every single day sitting with my patients, I hear examples of them going to seek care for their, let's say, going to a GYN for a routine pelvic screening and feeling really ashamed because the gown that they get asked to wear doesn't fit around their bodies. They leave those appointments, A, feeling ashamed, of course, and embarrassed, but B, feeling like there's something wrong with me, right? I'm going to try to take care of my health in this very routine way that women are supposed to do. There's not accommodating chairs in the waiting room, gowns that fit me. And so it must be me, right? There must be something wrong with me. And you can imagine over time, story after story, experience after experience like that affects someone's sense of self-worth, sense of self.
Absolutely. What types of patients do you see? What are they struggling with? Like, what problem do they come to you saying that they want to solve for?
Most of the time, people come to us saying, I want to lose weight, bottom line. And whether that's because a physician has told them that they need to lose weight, whether it's a commercial on TV or an Instagram reel or a friend or a family member, or they just don't feel good in their own bodies. So most of the time people come saying, I want to lose weight. But what I have seen over time is a shift in I think a positive way of people saying, yeah, I want to lose weight, but I really actually just want to be healthy. I just want to feel better. I just want to take care of myself in a better way. So we get the people often that have been bombarded with diet messaging much of their lives, often people that have struggled with weight and weight gain for years, have tried every single diet in the book, from the grapefruit diet to the keto to the South Beach to the, you name it. And they're just basically sick of being on that journey. They understand that their physical health is impacting their mental health and vice versa, and they want to work on it with us. So that's sort of our ideal client.
I would say that the majority of people that worry about their weight and have a weight problem believe that it's all about the food.
Yeah.
And so at some point, the patients that you see may get to the point where they realize, well, the food is important, but I need to address some of the other issues because it's not just all about the food.
Right. The people that do end up coming to us do at some level realize, look, food matters. Of course, food matters. We all know that. I mean, my clients are the smartest people I know. We know food matters, but you can't live in a society that treats you as though you're less than without it having an impact on you over time. most of us use food to cope with stress and anxiety and negative feelings. So then you get caught in this cycle of feeling really badly about the body that you have, using food to help you cope sometimes with the bad feelings you have about the body you have, those having a downstream effect, of course, of contributing to weight gain or other health-related issues, and then feeling like, look, I'm causing this myself. This is all, again, all my fault. And so we really work on shifting. And I think hopefully we make a lot of progress in helping people see we can address nutrition in a very meaningful way, but not until we've addressed how we have internalized bias in our society and stop treating ourselves like we're to blame for all of this.
So many people who come to see you, you said earlier, have tried every diet under the sun, maybe been to multiple physicians. Why have those interactions, experiences, and trials not worked for them? What are, I'm sure it's different for everyone, but what are the themes that you hear?
Up until the last few years, there haven't been a lot of physicians who are trained in obesity medicine. So in the same way that I wouldn't go see a cardiologist for my hip pain, we've been asking people with obesity-related issues all this time to see providers who are smart and well-trained, but not specialists in the area around which people need the most help. So if we look at board certifications in obesity medicine, those are going up. If we look at medical school curriculums, the development of obesity training and those sorts of things is moving in the right direction. We still have a long way to go. So that's one theme, that these interactions are sort of mismatched at some level just because of the lack of training in medical school. So I don't blame the physicians as much as I do the sort of medical education system larger. That's one. Number two, we persist in perseverating on this idea that weight is all about self-control, right? Eat less, move more, and you will be fine. And so if you pair that mentality with a lack of education on the physical and psychological and environmental and social determinants of obesity, then you get pretty negative interactions a lot of times between physicians and patients.
I'm married to a physician who, you know, often feels obligated to address someone's weight because it's such a contributor to their fatty liver or whatever else their concerns are. And yet he doesn't know whether to bring it up or not. So what do patients want? What do patients want their doctors to say or do?
What a great question. I hope every doctor listens to this.
I hope so.
What patients want, at least the patients I've talked to, and that's been a lot of them, is respect, is autonomy, is understanding that it is a complex conversation, and awareness that there is more to this puzzle than eat less, move more. And I think a lot of that can be encompassed by asking consent. It's so small and yet so powerful. So if your husband walks into a room with a patient, simply saying, would it be okay for us to talk about your weight, goes a tremendous distance in offering a different conversation, right? Because suddenly you're sitting next to the patient, sort of hypothetically or figuratively, instead of above them. You've just changed the dynamic of that conversation. Because sometimes patients will say, no, I don't want to talk about it. And then that gives you information. This person has a history here that I need to respect.
Yeah.
And guess what? Maybe you've opened the door for a conversation about it next time.
I do hope that a lot of clinicians listen to that single piece of advice. You know, as a physician, and I haven't seen patients in a long time, but I do know the psyche, and it's that you're trained and rewarded emotionally for fixing problems. And so you see your responsibility as you see a problem and you want to fix it. And
yes,
I agree. I don't think that there's malintent, but there is lack of education, lack of understanding, as a result, a lack of empathy on what the patient needs. And it translates into lack of good care. So it's unfortunate. Yes.
And so many of the physicians I know are burned out, just exhausted. So then you ask them to take on this issue that is A, really complex, and B, very chronic. And it's on top of the 12 other things they're supposed to address in this appointment. It's asking too much.
One report showed that prescriptions for Ozempic alone between 2019 and 2022 went up 40 times. And unfortunately, the healthcare system doesn't have an infrastructure so that patients are treated by board-certified obesity-trained physicians and certainly don't have the resources to be treated by a team. So as a result, there's a lot of doctors without the right training and without the right support for themselves or the patient. So you have been giving lectures to professionals about how to navigate this on the professional side. Tell me about that.
So I come at things and ask my physician colleagues to think about the interactions you have with patients around prescribing a GLP-1 or talking about weight in general from the point of view of a trauma-informed care approach. So in a nutshell, trauma-informed care is a style of interacting with patients. And the shorthand way I can describe this is adopting the mindset, instead of what's wrong with you, what happened to you? Okay, it's changing the space from which you operate. It's changing the mindset as a physician, as an allied health professional, nurse practitioner, whatever you may be, looking at your patient from the lens of what has happened to you and understanding that if the person in front of you has obesity or has struggled with weight their whole lives, many, many things have happened to that person that can cause significant traumatic stress. I can tell you stories, Arkell, that would just make you cry thinking about how people living in larger bodies have been treated. Just walking down the street, jeered, have things thrown at them, and so on. So a trauma-informed care approach just takes the angle, I'm going to approach you from the perspective of what has happened to you, understanding that that shapes how you're coming to me today.
Help me understand how a physician does that in the context of an appointment.
Mm-hmm. When you as a physician walk into a room thinking things like, I told this person they had to lose 40 pounds to get their knee replaced 6 months ago. I just checked their weight and they're up 5 pounds. What's wrong? Like, what's wrong with them? What are they thinking? You are in a very different mindset than the mindset I'm asking for, which is this patient is in a lot of pain and needs their knee replaced. They know that losing weight would help them, and yet their weight has gone up. I wonder what's going on for them. Suddenly, you're not in a what's wrong with you approach. You're in a what's been going on? What happened? Mm-hmm. Right? And that just that shift, just that realization that the person sitting across from you is trying their best. It's like changing your baseline assumption. Changing that assumption makes a difference.
So when I asked that question of how do you do that, I was almost expecting a much more complex answer requiring a lot of therapy expertise. And you're saying, just ask what's going on.
Yeah.
Which any physician could do, should do about everything.
Right. And the thing is, every physician I've ever spoken to, 99% of them want to do that, want to have that conversation with their patients. But it's like in the hustle and bustle, and I'm trying to fix this for you, and you're not helping me, right? It's like it's so easy to take that approach of like, what's wrong with you? Just do it. And if it were that easy, I promise you, every client I see would have made it happen.
So when you are conducting these lectures, trainings for physicians and clinicians, and they're in the audience, what is their reaction? How do they respond to your recommendations?
My job, I think, as an instructor, as a speaker, is to get them to buy in. And how do you get people to buy in? To A, be real with them, and B, to actually think about what do they care about? And so sometimes reminding them, and the data are there to support this, by the way, when you approach patient interactions with a more trauma-informed lens, what you get is not only better patient interactions, but you get lower burnout, better quality of job satisfaction, less stress, less anxiety. So it benefits both sides of the table, if you will.
Is there a different response that you get from physicians who are a healthy weight versus those that are above a healthy weight?
Great question. Not just physicians, allied health professionals in general experience the very same weight bias that non-healthcare professionals do, with the possibility of it even being a little worse. I've had more than one registered dietitian, for example, come to me and say, I live in a larger body. It is so hard for me to do my job because people look at me and judge me, you know, think I can't help them before they even know what's in my brain. And so, yeah, I would say that the people that I see that live in larger bodies have experienced pretty significant stressors related to living in that body, whether they have MD title behind their name or not.
So do you think that they're more capable, more open to shifting to treating patients through a trauma-informed lens than others are?
I don't know that body size is the determining factor around that, because people in other size bodies also have plenty of history with you know, being othered, or, you know, depending on the intersecting identities that people have, racial, gender, religious, you know, all sorts of different intersections. So I don't think it's specific to that. I think if once you sort of talk to a person from the space of me trying to understand like what's happened in your life, then it doesn't have to just be related to body weight in the same way with a patient, right? It's much more complex than that.
Okay. What is the hardest part for them to implement when they leave this lecture and go back to their practice?
I think maybe trusting. Yeah, I think that's it. Like trusting that applying a trauma-informed lens doesn't add more work is probably the hardest barrier. Once people try it and understand, oh, I'm not adding time, words, anything to this clinical interaction, I'm really just sitting in a different mindset, then I think it's easier to implement.
I want to switch back to the patient.
Yeah.
And the segue that I'll use is that if physicians can say, what's going on? You need a patient to be willing to say, what's going on? So with that, could you talk about how you work with patients to be able to articulate that? That might be scary. They might not know how to put words to it, or they might not know what physicians, clinicians are really listening for.
Yeah.
How do you help patients say what's going on?
I try to talk to my patients a lot around, you have autonomy in this relationship. You have the right to choose how this conversation goes. If you go into this conversation in a particularly vulnerable moment, for whatever reason, your spouse lost their job, your house flooded with the storms, that's not a great day to have a conversation about something hard. And you have permission to say, I just don't feel prepared to have this conversation today. Especially if you're interacting with a physician who asks you, is it okay to talk about this? So some other basic things are, I tell patients, like, you can say, I really don't want to know my weight today. It just is too upsetting for me. It's triggering for me. It doesn't help me in any way. And so I really try to help people understand, like, you have some room to assert yourself in this dynamic that doesn't have to be just like, leave me alone, no, or avoidance altogether.
And I'm going to ask that question though, one more time in another way. A patient might be okay. It might be okay for the physician to talk about their weight. And then the physician could say, what's going on? And in my experience, it might be difficult for patients to know that they can really share. I had a really stressful interaction at work. My mom is struggling in assisted living, whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that it takes some learning and confidence to know that you can be honest. And it also takes some self-awareness to know what's going on that could have triggered the additional binging or whatever food-related behavior there was.
I think I would say for a patient in that place, you can say, I have a lot going on in my world. And if you feel comfortable, you can say, you know, my mom just went into assisted living and I've been really stressed by it. And yeah, that's really hard for me, which by the way, opens the door for the physician to offer a referral to a mental health specialist, which is an underutilized resource. But otherwise, the patient can just say, yeah, there's a lot of stressors in my life. I don't really want to talk about them right now. This isn't the time or place, but it does affect how my body is feeling and my behaviors and all sorts of things. Because guess what? Stress, anxiety, pressures affect how physicians' bodies feel too, right? We're all human beings. We all live in these same vessels that operate at least fundamentally in some similar ways. So I think just reminding people, like, it's okay that mental health affects your physical health.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Oprah recently said, I've been blamed and shamed, and I blamed and shamed myself. And then a little later on, obesity is a disease. It's not about willpower. It's about the brain. And she said that in the context of her disclosing that she has made a lot of lifestyle modifications, but she's also taking one of the weight loss drugs. Do you believe that overweight and obesity is all about the brain?
Obesity is a complex neurobehavioral, environmental, social, genetic disease, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
I do think that's different than someone who gains 40 pounds during pregnancy and only loses 20. What we're talking about are people who have struggled often their whole lives with excess adipose tissue and its effects on their health.
Robin, I'm so glad you brought that up because I've wanted to ask you through this entire interview, is there a difference between overweight and obesity? Is there a difference between someone who loves food or is pregnant and then couldn't figure out how to put the lifestyle modifications in place to lose the extra weight? How do you differentiate between those two? And is there a difference?
So in my mind, the difference is that when I think about what defines obesity, I don't think about a number. I don't think about a BMI score. I think about the impact on health from having excess adipose tissue. If someone has adipose tissue that is resulting in, as you mentioned, fatty liver, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, you know, A1C problems, these sorts of things, that's a person that is more impacted from a health point of view than someone probably who has 10 or 15 extra pounds after a pregnancy. Their health numbers wise is probably great, right? If it's not, I will say, then we do need to address it because this is not about aesthetics. It's not about the BMI score. It's about how does the adipose tissue in your body affect your health?
What about if 10 or 15 extra pounds does not cause any end organ damage like fatty liver, but it drives the shame? Is that a person who should address this in a different way?
That to me is what our societal weight bias does, right? It is so harmful that it makes people who change weight by a very normal amount as we age and go through this life to shame and blame themselves. That's an example of the psychological manifestation of what's going on in your body. It's not because this is directly affecting necessarily your neurotransmitters. It's because of what society has taught you your entire life, that you're not as good if you wear a size, you know, 18 versus a size 12. And so in those circumstances, what we do is work a lot around body neutrality, maybe body appreciation, really sort of shifting that mindset again in the same way we do with physicians, thinking about mindset, right? Thinking about what are the pieces of data here? Is my health okay? What are the things I value? And am I doing those things? Am I going swimming with my kids in a bathing suit? Or am I hiding myself under the towel? Am I being in family photos, or am I always the one behind the camera because I don't want to be seen? It can happen to anyone at any shape and size. So that to me is a little bit different than treating someone with lifelong obesity.
There are so many individuals who are getting the GLP-1s prescribed because of the bias that we have, the mindset that our society and culture has around weight. Do you have an opinion about use of those drugs in that situation?
I always have an opinion about things.
Thank you. That's why we're talking.
Here's the bottom line. I understand the psychological feeling of not being good enough. And I understand that for some people, that whole mentality is triggered by weighing 10 extra pounds or 40 extra pounds or whatever it is. The GLP-1s are really designed to treat the health effects of excess adipose tissue. Now, that gets tricky from a mental health professional because depression and anxiety are real health effects, right? But there are other avenues to treat the body image disturbance that goes on with weight that I think should be our first line of priority if, importantly, the adipose tissue that that person has is not negatively affecting their health. But this is a really important point. I don't shame anyone's desire for help. I don't think that I'm in the position to say this person deserves it and that person doesn't, because I don't know what has happened to that person. I don't know their history. For all I know, the person who is sitting there starting a GLP-1 because they gained 20 pounds has previously weighed 200 extra pounds and had bariatric surgery 5 years ago and lost, right? And so there could be a whole story that I don't know. And I want people to find providers who will take the time to listen to their story and treat them as an individual human being from all of these different angles.
Yeah. That's probably the clearest approach that I've ever heard to that question. So thank you for that. So as we wrap up, I have one last question. Statistically speaking, 42% of the people listening to this podcast have obesity, and many may feel hopeless, uncomfortable in the body that they're in, or not feeling positive, destined to live this way. What parting words and recommendations do you have for them?
The idea that how a person's body stores adipose tissue can ruin someone's psychological life is a travesty to me. I see it every day. It's real and it exists. If I had to speak to people living with hopelessness around weight, I would say a couple things. One, weight is not a critical piece of determining your worth. Number two, we are in a new generation of treatment around obesity with the GLPs, of course, but many more things in the pipeline, many more things in the pipeline. So there's more help coming. And number three, there are people in this world who will treat you with the respect and dignity you deserve to access your mental and physical health care. So don't stop looking until you find them.
What a beautiful way to end this podcast. I'm sure that that's going to help so many people. Thank you so much, Robin.
Thank you.
I learned so much from Robin. I wish I'd known about trauma-informed care when I was actively seeing patients. And I really wish that her educational courses were standard curriculum in medical schools. But I also learned a lot as someone who's dealt with eating-related issues for the last 56 years. No, I'm not 56. I'm 61, but I've been dealing with this since I was 5. So the two key takeaways that resonated most with me were, number one, erase a fault mindset. Yes, obesity is complex, but a contributing factor that each of us has the power to control is the shaming and blaming. Whether it's shaming and blaming ourselves or others, holding on to a mindset that there's fault simply makes it worse. It's hard to erase a bias, but being aware of it is an important first step. 2, ask for consent. Robin talked about the importance of clinicians asking permission from patients before talking to them about their weight. But asking for consent also applies when you approach a friend, a sibling, a parent, a spouse, or even your child who is struggling with weight or body image issues. I only wish I was smarter about this when I was raising my own 3 daughters. Ask their permission and be ready to accept and respect no as an answer. Robin has a great website and social media presence where she posts articles and advice about weight-related issues. I'll put a link in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening in to this episode of Speak Up for Your Health. If you enjoyed it, I hope you leave a rating and review and then pass along the link for this podcast to friends and family. If you have your own story about finding your voice and advocating for yourself, share it with me. I'd love to hear it. You can email me or find me on Instagram or Facebook. The links are all in the show notes. Speak Up for Your Health is produced and edited by Jenny Lee Park and myself. Music is by Alex Tepper. Cover art is by Sean Sutton. Marketing and social media is by Shelby Epstein.